Recording. Hi, my name is Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk number 73. Not quite sure about that one. So the good news, the bad news is we have no questions, which means everybody has everything figured out. But the good news is whatever questions people want to ask, they can.
Yeah.
So this is your platform. As John Keating from Dead Poets Society says, gentlemen, the courtyard is yours. Do you remember that part?
I do.
You remember?
I don't, but whatever.
Helen likes my hat. This is a Drake University hat. This is where I met my sweetie. I was a junior. She was a senior. I asked her to the spring formal, or was it the fall formal?
Spring.
She said no. Wah, wah.
I had a date to another formal.
Was he half as cool as me?
No. I had a really bad time, to be honest, at that formal.
Care to share?
Nah. It was not fun.
I actually asked 7 different girls to go to me to that formal.
To go to me?
To go to the formal with me. And the 7th one said yes. So here's the lesson. If at first you don't succeed,
Try again.
And what's weird is the formal was in Galena, Illinois. And at the time, my younger sister was going to Dubuque, which was right next to Galena. So I'm like, well, maybe I'll just hang out with my sister.
And your sister said no.
My sister said no. It was awful.
All right. So
you don't want me to keep talking about this?
No. So there was one question. So we'll see. Let's go with these guys first. There was a question on Team Zen, but I'd rather go with the live people.
Well, why don't we? Because people always get shy before they warm up unless somebody knows that they have a question.
Okay.
Why don't we start with whatever that is, and then it'll give people an opportunity to say, hey, I need some support.
Okay. So it was about, it was like a sex talk thing, sex question that somebody had. I think it was Gail, about how to talk to her kids. There's actually another question too. There's a bunch.
Okay. Well, Helen has one too. So,
okay. So, what I would say, this is going to be like a really lame answer. I would say that first of all, Todd and I are going to do a whole talk about this at the conference.
It's going to be off the hook.
So you can come to that, because there's no way it could, you know, this is like an ongoing discussion. And if you live close by, we're doing this talk at Lyons Township on March 12th. Did you know that?
No.
Yep. So here's the thing, that kind of giving an overall umbrella thing about sex ed conversations with your kids is that there's a lot of, I tried to do this, I tried to say this, and it's not working. Mm. It's not true that it's not working. The fact that you're bringing something up, even if you're not getting a response that you want, doesn't mean that you're not communicating. Now, what I think is, like with all things, is we have to practice and refine the way that we are having conversations with our kids, that we don't say, well, I said something and they didn't have any good questions, so I'm done. We keep making, like, one of the things that I'm kind of putting together for the conference as far as what we're talking about in our sex ed talk is, this isn't like a thing where we can be like, well, I gave it a try. With our kids, we have their physical health, their emotional health, their spiritual health, educational health, and their sexual health. This is an important part of parenting. Sexuality is not something we can say, well, let's just hope for the best, because, you know, I'm just going to throw them out there. Like, this has to be not a sit down across from the table kind of conversation, but an ongoing commentary. Like I know you guys are going to be like, that doesn't make any sense, but I am watching The Bachelor with 2 of my daughters right now, partly because one of my daughters is watching it no matter what. So I said, well, I'll watch it with you. And we talk about sex throughout the whole show. It comes up all the time. Peter is like making out with everybody.
He has no
discretion.
He is scoring left and right.
And I'm like, girls, and I'm able to talk to them about previous Bachelors that I used to watch, like the first 4 seasons of The Bachelor way back when. They didn't make out all the time.
Carrie Keller says, stop
kissing people, Peter. Thank you. He's like, I don't know you at all, but let's start this way.
Will you say that the kind of, what's the word, the naughty thing that they said on the first thing, that there's 2 kind of strikingly.
I think I did.
No, we did. You said it at the sex talk, I thought.
Oh, yes. Maybe. So in the first episode, of the bachelor. So when the girls come out of the car, they all, some of them are very normal. They just walk out, and some of them have these really like crazy things that they do, like dress up a certain way or whatever, or they say something crazy. So one of the girls got out of the car, and this is Victoria, who's still in the running. And she said, "Hi, Peter." She's like, "I just want you to know that I have a really dry sense of humor, but that's the only thing about me that's dry right now."
Oh.
So there's a conversation topic. Like, this okay.
This is like on 7 p.m. on Channel 7. What's going on here?
Right. And there is kind of like a, wow, what's going on here? And there's a bunch of things that I can talk to the girls about that the producers told her to do that, which I know for a fact because I read Bachelor Nation. I recommend reading it.
I know.
And I also watch Unreal, which is about The Bachelor, and that's what they do. They make these things happen because it's got to be good TV. So you're also talking about the media and how it's manipulated, but you're also talking about the appropriateness and what is, you know, is that conversation appropriate? It leads to such an organic discussion. And you don't have to, The Bachelor's horrible, meaning that I'm watching it, but I understand that's not for your younger kids. It's not where you're going to go. You can, but it can be other relationships.
Hold on, people have lost audio.
Oh,
we're going to hold on. Oh, it's back. So sorry about that, everybody.
I think sometimes when people jump on, because there's a lot of people jumping on right now, sometimes it cuts out. Okay, so what's back on?
So real quick, I don't know what got cut out, but I was at a men's weekend this weekend, and we had a sexuality and intimacy discussion, which is rare. It never happens with guys. And the amount of guys that had stories like, okay, my sex talk was my dad throwing me a box of condoms when I was in high school and said, don't get into trouble.
What is that? What does that mean? Like, what, there's no, and I like want to go so many places here, but I don't want to take up too much time because I think people have questions. Is that there's so many, like the idea that a boy knows what that means, like, and that he can like be like, okay, so basically I should be having a lot of sex because I have a whole box of condoms, but I'm not going to get into trouble. Does that mean not into trouble with my friends or the girl or the law? Like, there's so many things. And I was just listening to an interview, and this has been happening a lot in a lot of podcasts I've been listening to about raising boys and girls, is people will say, wow, we really got, it was an Alec Baldwin interview, and he's like, I'm really worried about my daughters and making sure, you know, I have a 23-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old daughter, and I'm really worried about them and worried about them. And, you know, Megan and Jody, who were on the interview, they were like, you got to start thinking about your sons. Like, quit worrying about your daughters and start talking to your sons, and also talk to your daughters. But there's this misunderstanding that we have that, like, boys are easy and they'll know what to do sexually, but girls are weak and need help. Like, we've got to really kind of understand that boys, in no offense and any of the men on, but they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing.
Don't have a clue. We're lost. We, even as like grownups, we,
I know, this is like grown men who can't have conversations about their sexuality because it's never happened before.
And I'm willing to bet that there's whatever 13 people on here, you have carried more of the weight in regarding to talking to our kids about sexuality and intimacy. And I think that's completely normal in a messed up way. And when I say normal, like typical.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's wrong.
Wow.
Dads have to have these conversations with their sons and their daughters.
Well, if they don't, if there is a household that does have a male and a female as parents, they're missing half of the gender conversation, like the girls and the boys. I'm not talking about that the boys need to talk to the boys and the girls. Like, you're missing half of a perspective. And those of you that come from a same-sex, you know, parent situation, to have like uncles or cousins or other, you know, people talking to your kids, not about, it doesn't have to be, you know, the mechanics over and over. The mechanics are surfacey. Yeah. The mechanics are, this is how the pipes work, right? This is, even though
the plumbing,
I didn't understand all the plumbing and pipes until I was 30 and trying to get pregnant.
Do you want to say what you said to me last night about the American Girl thing?
Yeah. So, you know, I just found out, because I'm reading all these books right now about sex education in our country, is that the best-selling book, which I'm sure you guys know, is the American Girl book for, you know, girls' bodies and, you know, for understanding their their sexuality, or so I thought. But what's missing in the anatomy is their clitoris. It's not in the book.
Maybe they forgot.
No, they didn't forget. They left it out. And why did they leave it out? Because we can't talk about that. We can't talk about desire and pleasure and the way a woman's body really works. It is not in there. Mm-hmm. But when you look at boys' anatomy, there's nothing that we leave out. Mm-hmm. You guys, it's okay for you to have all your parts, but I can't have all my parts.
No, no.
So I guess the point is that even that discussion, like of pointing out to your, if you have a daughter, that there are other body parts that aren't listed here. It's not just the steer head of like fallopian tube, blah, like there's more. Like, do you know that the vagina is the inside part of the girl's body? The vulva is the outside part.
I didn't know that until I just read that book like 3 months ago.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, we're not even naming the body parts correctly. So do you see how it's so rich? It's not about, I need to talk to you about when you have sex. That's that much of it. It's, I need you to understand your body, how it works, not be ashamed of it. You know, understand all the nuances, understand why in our culture we struggle with it, because we are the most over-sexualized culture and the least amount of education about it.
And more probably teenage pregnancy and all that stuff, right?
So these things don't match up. You know, like we say, oh no, we're just trying to keep the kids innocent. But I drive on 290 and there's a lot of billboards up that are not keeping my kids innocent. So
real quick, we're going to have Helen ask her question.
Right,
but first she had a comment. She says, oh, you can talk about clitoris in France. So apparently—
I know. The Europeans have it much better.
But Carolyn has an add-on sexuality question. My 7-year-old son and 5-year-old daughter, sometimes we're concerned about how the 7-year-old's friends interact with our daughter when they're playing. How to talk to our daughter, what she should not let happen, and how to talk to our son, who shies away from conflict, about how to stand up to protect his sister if his friends are doing or saying something that doesn't feel right to him or her.
So you need to have a conversation with the two of them together. If that really is the issue where he has friends that might be treating her if you're just, there's so many questions I have because if
well, it's perfect. Cause she's right here.
Oh, good. Okay.
Carolyn.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I was talking with my partner last night. I said, oh, we've got this call tomorrow. You can be on the call. I said, Millie's husband joined the call and then jumped off, you know?
Yes.
And she said, no, she said, I'm busy. I said, great. You can listen to it afterwards. But I said, do you have any questions? I don't have any questions yet. So this is something that she brought up with them. And there are a couple of boys, there are a couple of neighborhood boys that are only children. So if we have play dates for my daughter, she either has to stay with us or she has to adapt to be with the boys. Well, sometimes the boys have too much aggression. They'll either want to use her as target practice, which is not, you know, respectful. Or there's one boy who likes to sneak into her room, get her dolls. We don't know what he does with those dolls. I know he threw one in the trash can, but I think, you know, so we're just concerned that the boys are going to become curious and she's going to be there and she's kind of a people pleaser in some regards that she wants people to be happy, although she won't people please to eat her food. But she wants to have the companionship of the kids. And sometimes these boys are really nice, but sometimes, you know, they're only 7. So I don't know. It's an awful lot to ask a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old to stand up and say, okay, let's look at this rationally. This doesn't feel okay. Don't let this happen. Cause it's hard enough. You know, they can't, you know, my son can't really even stand up for himself, mm-hmm. Much less stand up for his sister.
So can I, let me talk and then you,
okay.
She's 5. So you gotta stay close, right?
No, I would say we need to get,
stay close, but then, and then you got to teach her what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And if it's not, then, you know, these are our private parts and, you know, got to have that discussion. But, you know, to her point, the 7-year-old, you know, you have to kind of monitor.
Well, but even the way you say that, Todd, there's fear in it. Okay. There, it's like, you got to stay close. And I think this is what I mean about physicality, emotional, sexual, is that as soon as we inject fear into that, then that's when it takes a whole different turn in our brain. Mm-hmm. If we can instead talk to her about, it's similar to the boys never like hit you or beat up on you, do they? You know, and if she says yes or no, whatever the answer may be, and same thing about, and hopefully she knows the names of her private parts. We always say private parts are down there, but you know, there's nobody's touching you in places that are uncomfortable, correct? And she may say, what do you mean? And say, you know, the parts that are private to you, your, you know, vulva, vagina, the language that's appropriate. And if she, you know, but you're not asked, if it's asked with fear, then this is how it gets structured in their brain, is that something to be afraid of. And I know a lot of people say, but it is, because we need to be vigilant, but we don't, when they're little, because really what Caroline is saying is that this could happen.
Right.
She's nothing not has yet, happened.
But they are aggressive.
They are aggressive, but does that mean sexual?
No, not at all. But right. She's like, you know, trying to prepare.
Right. And I would prepare in the same way that you would prepare emotionally or physically, meaning you would talk to her about, like, if the boys were hitting her, beating up on her, or throwing things, that's not okay. And if anybody is touching you in a way that's uncomfortable, that's not. And the reason why, and so some people may say, why, what's the big deal about having the fear in there? She's less likely to come to you if she's thinking there's something to be ashamed of or afraid. But if it's, they told me, you know, that I should move my shirt, or that they were all doing this, or we're all touching each other, then there is a, and you've kind of talked about it in a way that you've talked about every other aspect of her life, then she'll have no problem saying, hey, that did happen. But I think sometimes we put such pressure and such, and here's the thing, like, this is the reason why this takes like so long to talk about, is because this really isn't about them. It's about us and our discomfort with it and our fear around it. And we have to really like take some deep breaths, not only when we're about to talk about sex with our kids, but also when we are going to, like we have to be able to recognize what the energy we are bringing, if it be fearful energy or assuming energy that someone is going to touch them, or that aggression equals sexuality. Those are two different things. And the seven-year-olds, they don't know yet either. The seven-year-olds aren't being predators, you know, and I know, you know, because one of them's your kid, you know, like that's any seven-year-old, there's normal curiosity. And then there's being able to, if they do, you know, because we all know this from our own history or our own kids. There are times the kids play doctor, or they do, you know, you show me yours, I'll show you mine. And that it's not those predators.
And those are opportunities for more discussion.
Exactly. That's like, well, let me explain why it's so normal to be curious about that. I completely understand. But a lot of times we jump on fear, you know, like then that means this, and that means my child to be traumatized. And the trauma comes with the experience they have after, how it's received, how it's discussed or not discussed or avoided or pushed away. That's where the discomfort, if you guys listen to our show about wounds and triggers, it's not about what happens. It's about how we deal with it following the experience. Any experience can be worked through.
Carolyn, so, what do you think?
Yeah, so what about the boy and being an upstander? Because his inclination is always to shrink back. When we drop him off at certain things where he's solo with other friends and activities, the parents say, your son is outstanding. All the other boys are terrible. Well, that doesn't mean that he's having outstanding experience. He's internalizing a lot of stuff, and it's not a great experience for him, but to other people, he seems like he's no problem whatsoever. So he's going to be very averse to going against his friends if something is happening to his sister that's uncomfortable.
So that's when he need, in that situation, because you know his personality and you understand that a lot of that is people pleasing or just who he came in the world as, where he's a little more of a peacemaker, is that you can give him some release valves, meaning you can let him know, and I know he doesn't have a phone yet. But if he is ever in a situation with his friends, if it be with his sister or anything else, because you don't want to make it solely focused on that. You want to make this more of a universal thing. if he's ever in a situation where he feels like he doesn't have options or he's concerned about something happening, that he can always come to you and that the two of you or the three of you will work it through. And that doesn't mean come to me and I'll take care of business. Like, a lot of reasons kids don't come to their parents is because they know their parents will make a bigger deal about it. And they're like, I'm protecting my friend and myself and my sister from the extreme reaction my parents are going
to
have.
When all they really need to do is process with their parent.
Because he doesn't know yet what's right or wrong in that realm. Does that make sense? Like, you may find out that something happened, and let's take it off sexual because that can be so intense. You may find out that she got hit or hurt or something was taken away from her and he didn't stand up, but maybe he didn't see it. Maybe there was more to the story. Maybe it wasn't black and white. Like, you know, it's kind of a, what we want for our kids is that they have places to continue learning rather than expecting that they're always going to know the exact right or wrong answer. So basically what you'll talk to them about is, it's like not even a discussion of here's what you do, son. It's more about, if you're ever in a situation with your friends, with your sister at school, and you're not, something doesn't feel right in your gut, this is where you kind of get into things that don't feel good in your body. Come to me, because I totally have those experiences too. Like, talk to him in more of a peer level about it rather than I'm going to come in and save the day. Then he just knows that's an open discussion.
Do you want to hear what Nikki said, sweetie?
Yes.
Childcare taught our kids to say, stop it. I don't like it. The kids got really comfortable setting the boundary. Childcare, elementary school doctors tell kids no one is allowed to touch you in an area which is covered by your bathing suit. Doctors and add without your permission, and moms and dads. So anyways, that's good. Just very simple advice.
Exactly. That would be for the daughter.
The daughter, yeah.
Yes. Okay. And in those are, you know, there's like 12 different discussions with this one question, you know, like, because there's, we have to be in the right state of mind and that we're not in an overly, especially if we had an experience with inappropriate touching when we were young. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a neighbor friend who had an experience, and so she's so overly concerned. Like, she's like, I'm mama bear for my girls. No one's going to touch my girls. But that's not a great energy to bring, because then there's not a lot of communication. There's a lot of fear.
Yeah.
And then her girls go into situations more afraid. And so there's, we got to take care of ourselves. Then there's, how do I love what Nikki said, you know, for your daughter to just say, no, that's not okay. Or that it's always okay to say no. That, you know, what's ours is ours. And you can talk to her about that. But then with your son, you know, upstanding is, that's a lot of role modeling. Like, upstanding is less about, let me tell my son what he can do, and more about demonstrating to him options there are.
And before we move on to Helen, it's really scary to be an upstander. I'm a straight white man living on the planet Earth who's 47 years old.
And it's still difficult.
It's hard for me when, you know, some idiot is telling a sexist joke at a bar. Like, sometimes I'll say something, but it's just scary. So I can only imagine what it's like for anybody else, because if I struggle, it's kind of sad, but
we all do.
I know, but I'm the one with the power and the privilege. You know what I mean?
Well, and like with your son, like, to have the understanding, and this is for all of us, that their world that they're building is in that school with those friends. And sometimes our expectations is for them to shatter their world. And instead of shattering their world, how can we create a more, you know, a world that we can develop and mold and change, versus go in there, you tell them to stay away from your sister. You're not saying this, Carolyn, I'm exaggerating. You know, instead of putting all that imposing, like, that, all that pressure on him, instead it's, you're developing and learning over time. They're just kids and they don't have the adult rationale to know everything as being right or wrong, good or bad, black or white, because they're still learning themselves. So what they need to know is, if something doesn't feel right, if it be someone's touching you inappropriately or saying something that feels uncomfortable, that you are someone they can talk to about it, rather than someone who's going to bring down the hammer.
Yeah.
Now, there will be situations where a hammer may be necessary. I'm not saying that's out of the question, but they need to know. Like, I think I'm, my girls come to me about some things that I think are a little touchy, but they know I'm not going to overreact about it. They know that I can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And sometimes even if it doesn't, I can't, meaning I'm having like a strong reaction to it in their presence, I handle it well. And then maybe I go to you and say, oh, that was hard. But they just need to know that this is an ongoing conversation.
So hopefully that helps a little bit, Carolyn. We got a lot of people on. I'm going to move to Helen. And then whoever wants to go after Helen, just put it in the chat box. Hold on, Helen. I'm getting you there. Helen, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi. It's a bit of a change of topic, but I think it's just a reminder because I'm stuck in a situation where I have a friend who has suffered some quite severe sort of mental challenges, mental wellness challenges. And it's been going on for years. And we used to work together, and then she had a couple of like burnouts and basically then lost her job. And she's now working again, but in a much sort of like a lower capacity. Like she's working as a sort of an assistant rather, like she was the manager before. Anyway, so I've had quite a lot of like shared experience, so we've become quite close. But some of the things she tells me, it's really, she's so hard on herself and she's so critical. And it's always, you know, like about how she's not doing well and how she's so disappointed. And you know, after a bit of time and things, I can really see this. And I've learned a lot about self-compassion, and Kristen Neff is my go-to sort of like, oh, you know, this is, have you heard her talk? Have you read her book? Have you, you know, done this meditation, blah, blah, blah. So,
Helen, I don't know, maybe it could be ours. So maybe we should shut up. Might be ours. I know, but everybody else might.
This isn't, it's not helping at all. So that was really helpful for me, but it's obviously not, I'm just not getting through. So anyway, sometimes I get quite frustrated, but I can't really, I mean, she's doing so much, she's hurting herself so much that I you know, I can't add to that. But, you know, do you have any ideas or any ways of just thinking about it so you don't sort of get stuck in this trap of like becoming quite critical? Like, it's really unfair, but at the same time, it's like, why can't you see that this is not helping?
Mm-hmm.
I'm stuck. So anyway, I'm just looking for some advice.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You want to go first?
No, you go.
So I think that your situation with your friend, even though it sounds, you know, more extreme in that she, you know, you've seen kind of a progression and how it's hurt her and it's changed her job situation, is that there is a place where we have to recognize that we are not in charge of them. And that can be, hi, Jace. Sorry, my daughter just got home early. She's sick today. Hi, babe. That you can show up for her with the love and the compassion that you would like her to show herself, but it is not your responsibility to be her teacher. I think that with our friends and family members and kids, we come at them as like, how do I teach them? How do I show them a different way? When really the only person you need to do that for is yourself. Because the way that people learn is by watching how other people do it. And that if you are a constant compassionate presence for her, she is getting as much out of that as she is a book. And so it's you kind of taking it off your shoulders of, I need to do something different. What do I do to help her? And instead love her. Helen, if she opens the door and says, Helen, I really want a book, or you seem to be so gentle on yourself, what do you do? Then the door is wide open for you to share, and you can share things until she's full. But until that time, well, I'll be up in a second or in a little bit. But until that time, you get the blessing of taking care of yourself in the name of taking care of her. And I know it sounds really like, what does that sound like? Not superficial, but it sounds like that's not going to do anything. But it does. I mean, this is what I tell my social work. I just taught this morning, my whole class with my social work students today was, if you want to take care of your clients, you have got to show up taken care of. You have got to show up in the room taken care of.
Yeah, I feel like, first of all, Helen, I've totally been there. I'm there every day. I'm trying to fix everything. I'm trying to fix her. I'm trying to fix them. I'm trying to fix my career. I'm trying to fix. The only invitation I have is I feel like this is happening for your, as an invitation to practice acceptance. Like, and that doesn't mean don't help your friend.
But no.
We first need to accept the reality that my friend is struggling. My daughter is struggling. My son is struggling. And if we can do that, then we might, we are in a better position to truly and authentically support them in whatever it is they need. And then the other thing is, can we be okay when we're not okay? Mm. Like, there's a part of you that is not okay because you want your friend to be healthy and you want them to be content and happy and bless you for it. But can we practice being okay when something bad is going on? And my gosh, that is not an easy thing to do. But it is possible.
You know, two things that I know we've, Todd and I have shared before on shows or maybe on Zen Talks, is one of them that's super helpful is to say, my friend is really struggling right now. It keeps it in present time. And I know you can say, but historically, she's always been struggling. I understand that. But right now, she's struggling. But it is just today. You're just being here with it. You're just loving her. You're just accepting it. And one of the, you know, best parts of meditation or of any kind of, you know, compassion experience or noticing your thoughts is that you notice how everything kind of comes and goes, how it gets really heightened and how the storm is really big. And then it kind of comes and goes. And with your friend, even though you've seen a consistent decline, I don't want to deny that. Like you know, you've seen a decline. At the same time, in a couple days, you may not be as concerned about this. Not that you won't be concerned about her, but it may not seem as bad. And that, like Todd said, it's kind of like, can you hold your seat in this moment and love her and accept her? And one of the best things you can do is listen, you know, not take it in as your problem, but listen. So you can do all the things you've been doing, but maybe with less pressure on yourself, that it's up to you. Like, that's kind of what, because I'm with you, Helen, and you're the person I'm talking with instead of your friend, my big advice to you is, like, you don't have to take this on your shoulders. You get to love and accept her without thinking you need to keep working on how to love and accept her. It's, and this is the same, these are universal principles. It's the same with our kids.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go to Anita next, but I just want to give Helen a chance just to see if she had any thoughts. Helen, are you there?
Yeah, I knew you'd remind me. It's not like it's the first time. It's just like forgotten.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Me yeah. Too. And I was taking some notes as well. So thank you.
Well, I heard you before we even started talking, and you were asking your own question. You were actually coaching yourself a little bit
yeah.
in a good way. So go back and listen to you, because you actually
knew.
You kind of already knew. So go back and listen to it. And I think you'll hear some things yeah. that maybe surprise you.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Helen. Where is good old Anita? Oh, I'm not supposed to say good old. Where's good young Anita?
Peg's laughing at you.
There's Anita. Yeah, it looks like Anita's in her car. You in your car, Anita?
Yes. I'm in my car. I just finished work.
Oh, so glad that you joined us. What's up?
Yeah, so a bit of a rough morning with my younger daughter, who's 12. She, my girls leave for school in the morning. They take the bus about 7 a.m. And she gets to school, and they have like a period of time around 8 o'clock where they can kind of use their devices and their iPads before they got to go to school. And the school has a firewall that stops them from texting and all that. And I'm getting messages from her mom, come pick me up. I need you, like, right now, you know. And she lost a ring. She dropped it in the street this morning, and I went back and found it. So that's fine. It made it sound like that was her initial problem, was that she lost her ring and she was freaking out. I said, I found the ring. It's all good. And she was like, no, you don't understand. You have to come now, right away. Like, I'm freaking out. I'm crying. I need you. And I hesitated because she kind of does this. It's not such a new thing, and she won't tell me why. So I'll tell her, go to the secretary, get on the phone, tell her you need to talk to your mom and call me. I'm not just going to come because you're texting me in a 1 minute period that you have and expect me to show up. if you weren't okay this morning, you know, maybe don't get on the bus type of thing. But when she's at home, she's shut down completely. She doesn't talk to us. She goes to her room. She doesn't, you know, she'll spend 2 hours in the bathroom with her shower and whatever she's doing in there. Like, she just is in her own world. So it's hard for me to know what's even going on with her. I guess I kind of assume she's mostly okay, but it doesn't feel okay. But I give her space, because as soon as I speak, I literally start to say 3 words to her and she's like, stop, mom, be quiet, don't talk to me. So when she reaches out, there's like a piece of my heart that wants to like jump in, and especially that she's, when I'm not responding to her text, or when I tell her, no, I'm not going to come get you right now, I need to know what's going on, then I get, I hate you so much, why can't you just come get me? So, and on top of that, the whole weekend was spent dealing with some stuff that her sister's going through, and they both missed. Do I jump? Do I help her when she finally opens up and says she needs me to come get her and like rescue her? Or do I say, I really don't sense that it's such a bad thing that's going on with you. Like, maybe you just didn't prepare for an exam, but you don't talk to us, so we don't know that, you know? So,
okay. So Anita, do you mind if I interrupt you?
Please do. Cause I'll keep going.
So first of all, bless you. I've been there. I'm guessing that most, if not everybody on this call has been there. How old is your daughter?
12. My younger one is 12 and my older is 14.
Okay. So I don't think there's any simple answer. But what's coming to me right now is, how often does she text you and say, come pick me up?
Well, so far this year, since she's been back from school after the Christmas break, she's missed one day of school every week so far. And this is the third week. So she missed a day last week, and it's not necessarily texting me to come get her, but she'll just be like, oh, I can't go in the morning for whatever reason. So it's fairly often, I'd say once every 2 weeks or 3 weeks, maybe.
And do you always, if she were to text you, I'm just wondering, like, sometimes I'm always like, do something different. So is there room for you to, I know she's really hard to connect with right now. She's really shut down. Yeah. Being 12 is not that easy, as my wife told me this morning about my kid, because I have sometimes have certain expectations. What if you just said, coming right now? And, you know, I'm just trying to give you a different perspective, because sometimes, yeah, if that were to happen to me, I'd be like, well, if I do that, then she's going to abuse that privilege, or she's going to like take advantage of me next time she runs into something difficult, that I'll just come in and hero her and I won't have to do it. But I guess my invitation, I'm sure Kathy will have a lot of thoughts about this, but my invitation is maybe just to try it out, to say, hey, you're struggling, I could help you, I'm coming to get you right now. And just pour out this completely unconditional like love and absence of judgment and all that, and see what happens. I know that, you know, if you say one wrong word, then it turns on its head, but just try something different. So I'm going to let Kathy talk.
So I think that in 12, and like Todd said, I think there's a lot of people who have kids who are teens or preteens and they can relate. But I do think that there is room to have a discussion with her or communication with her. Eventually, it's going to take time. It's not something that's going to happen in one talk, but what I'll tell you that I think your daughter is feeling, even without knowing all the details, is that any conversation that she has with you will be either some kind of directive or trying to help, or that it will somehow make her feel something she doesn't want to feel. Because when she says, mom, stop, 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 what she's saying is, everything you're saying to me, it's hurting my senses. Not you personally, Anita. This isn't a personal attack. It's actually a demonstration roundabout of love, is that what you think and do has an effect on her because she loves you. And I know sometimes that can be hard to feel in the moment, or maybe even right now, but there are people in her life who don't affect her because she doesn't care. She cares about you. She cares what you think. She cares what you're going to say. So she's literally blocking your words. And over time, what the practice with her is going to be less about how do I fix this problem that you keep, whatever the problem is, the fact that you don't go to school, the fact that you're texting me, because, you know, what Todd said isn't necessarily wrong. Like, there are times when you're just going to pick her up and love on her, and but it goes deeper than that, because picking her up once isn't going to solve everything, you know, because you'll probably get a text the next week. It's how can I meet you rather than as a mom who's trying to solve you as a problem? How can I just come in and know how, so she knows you don't need anything from her? Because our kids feel when we absolutely need them to be different, need them to talk to us, need them to understand us, need them, we're coming at them and saying, you're making my life difficult, even if we're not using those words. And Anita, I'm saying this not at you, at all of us, because we all do this. Like, this is the, like, you're doing okay, right? You know, even if our kids are doing fine, we like need this reconfirmation that they're doing fine. And they're, and our kids know that we need stuff from them all the time. And she has gotten to a point where she's like, Mom, I don't even want to hear you or talk to you right now. So she, instead of waiting for her to change or punishing her or disciplining her for this, it's instead trying to have a conversation with her about things that have nothing to do with anything that is happening. And I know that it's like, but I need to solve this problem. I totally hear you. Like, but you'll find if you're, you know, maintaining, you know, getting her to school as much as you can get her to school. And then at the same time, trying to have conversations with her where you're not asking anything of her. You're not saying, come down to dinner. Or you're not saying, are you done with your homework? You're just saying, and I'm using this because I brought it up, did you watch The Bachelor today? You know, like, it doesn't have to be The Bachelor. I'm kidding. It could be, you know,
yeah, just make it.
Do you have a playlist that you can send
make
me?
Make it completely different.
You need to engage with her in a way that is not mom-daughter.
And the way you do that, and then I want to hear what you have to say, Anita, is you do it from above the line, which means you're open, you're curious, you're willing to learn, you're thinking out of the box. Like Kathy's idea of, like, you know, instead of like, because she probably can predict what you're about to say every situation. So catch her off guard and say, let's go to a movie, or what song was the last one you played on your phone? Or because, like, last night, my one daughter wanted me to take her to the DMV, but she wanted me to take her at a time when I wasn't able to. I dropped below the line and I got annoyed and frustrated, and we were battling a little bit. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but we were battling a little bit. And this morning I walked up to her and I'm like, listen, because she's watched the above line, below line video with me. I'm like, I was below the line last night and I just wanted to apologize and we'll figure it out. And, you know, she softened up. So I say that just because I know my own mom, rest in peace, she never once said she was sorry. I'm still not really good at it, but I'm getting better at it. So, you know, it's just, I'm just trying to, like, maybe reframe the energy that you bring to any interaction that you have with her. So what are your thoughts, Anita?
Yeah, that's definitely helpful. I did kind of just jump in 2 weeks ago when she said, come get me, please, please, please. And it was had to do with cramps. So then I was like, okay,
yeah,
no problem. I'll be right there. So I've jumped in. I just, the below the line thing comes from just, I think right now I'm in a very energetically low place because of dealing with the older one. And, you know, it kind of like feels like when it rains, it pours, but
totally
we can bring ourselves to try and see. I see what you're saying about where she's coming from, like mom stop and you know, coming from another direction to her. And so, you kind of just dig down and do what's best for them and then try to have some self-care. I think you probably tell me that too.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I'd say is we as a team are your cheerleaders. Like, I'm not saying that I'm not worried about, you know, of course I care about your children, but my first thought is about, like, as soon as you talk about your kids, but I'm like, but how are you? Like, I want you to feel supported by us. Like, no wonder you're depleted. Like, you just went through this thing with your daughter this weekend, and then your daughter's texting you and saying, come get me, which feels scary, which probably brings up a whole bunch of shit from your childhood. Like, this is work. Like, Tom and I just had a conversation this morning about all this stuff. Like, everything that my daughters go through brings up my stuff, and I have to work through that on top of helping them in present time, on top of partnering and working. Like, I just want you to know that you're not dropping the ball. You are in the midst of it with all of us. You're tired. And if you can sit in that car after this talk and just listen to music and just lay there, I support you in that.
Yeah.
Like, don't go right home. Don't go back to work. Okay. Go get a big, either iced tea or Diet Coke or whatever you like, and just be like me.
I would prefer a Mr. Misty Freeze from Dairy Queen, which is part, part ice cream, and it's simply delightful. I know it's weird on a Tuesday afternoon.
But Carrie, we got to spice it up a little bit.
I'm going to go over to Carrie because she wants to say something to Anita, I think. And then we're going to go over to Jennifer. Carrie?
Yeah, hi. Anita, I just wanted to say I have a 16-year-old daughter, and we've been kind of dealing with this lately. I've actually, I don't know if this is the same for you, but it fluctuates, and I feel like it's gotten to the point. My son is now away at college, so she's the only one home, and I feel like sometimes her mood defines like the mood in our home, which makes me crazy. Mm. So I'm trying to not do that because obviously I realize that's not good, but I've been keeping track of like how our interactions are for like the last 3 months. And I just have a few like random words that I'll write down, but it makes me feel so much better because I feel like when I have a really hard time with her or when it's like, she's like, shut up, I don't want to talk to you, go away. My initial fear is like sad. My initial emotion is fear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I always worry, like, is there something else going on that I don't know about? And that is what always scares me. But exactly the same thing. It's like, she just does not want to talk to me because she knows what I'm going to say. And I do feel like on some level, like she feels like there's some expectation, you know, for me, for her to say it's all good. Cause that's what I want to hear. Anyway, my point is, I totally feel for you and it's so hard. And I do feel like, I try to do those things where I just try to stay connected with her at the times when she'll be open to it. And I feel like overall, it seems like more days than not, we're great, you know? And sometimes the dark days seem like it's always, and I have to go look back at that chart and be like, it's so dumb, but I'm so type A. I love my chart, but it makes me feel so much better because I realize it really, I mean, you know, 90% of the days we were totally fine. Not awesome, but like not butting heads at each other. Whereas then like, you know, 5% of the time I'm like, I'm crying, you know, like I'm crying in the bathroom away because I'm like, I just can't handle the emotions of it. So anyway, I support you. It's so hard and you just got to keep trying. I just feel like I just have to believe that if I just continue to try to stay connected with her so that she knows that I'm here for her, that no matter what, even if she has shit going on that I don't know about, that it will work out in the long run.
Thank you, Carrie.
Beautiful. And let me say, that was so great, Carrie, because that's the thing is that how many of you as teenagers had shit going on? Okay, right? So, and did you work it out? Did you learn something from it? Did you feel pain? Did you not tell your parents everything? Did you find new friends because of it? Did you realize something about yourself? Like, our children don't have to tell us everything that's going on in their lives for them to be okay. What Carrie's saying is important because we don't need to know all the details, but we're just kind of orbiting around so they know they aren't alone. We don't have to get like, I tell my girls sometimes, I don't need to know all the things. I don't want to know all the things. I just want you to know I'm here if the things get too heavy. I don't want to be the carrier of my children's problems because that's their life and they need to learn how to do that. And as Brené Brown says in the Wholehearted Parenting Manifesto, I help them feel it and sit in it and know that they're accepted and supported when they're going through it. But I don't need to know all the details because I sure went through a lot without my parents' involvement, and that's what grew me up. So that's, you know, one way to look at it too, is connection is not about daughter, tell me everything, or son, tell me everything. Connection is I'm here, but I trust you and you have the tools you need. And when those tools fail, come to me. That's the
Well, and Dan Siegel in that new book, it's in order to have secure attachment, you want to make sure your kids feel safe, seen, and soothed. Well, you can at least do safe and seen. You can see them. Mm-hmm. Soothed might be hard because they may not want to be soothed. But anyways, before we go to Jennifer, I just wanted to read a few things that were in the chat box. Gail said, so is there a line of how much abuse we should or should not accept or take from our teenage girls? What do we say when they're really crossing the line? That's a big question that I don't think we're going to get to just because
I can make a quick comment about it. If they're crossing the line, then that's a conversation. It's not and crossing the line means, and someone will say, well, what does that mean? It's different because you know your kids, you know your personality with them. A lot of times what we deem as crossing the line is they're talking back to us or they have their own opinion or they're, you know, like crossing the line basically means let's have a communication about how we're communicating rather than I'm going to overpower you and now I'm going to take away your phone and now you have to stay home for 2 weeks. You're just shutting down the communication. And that's a very simple response. Like, here's the thing about the things that Todd and I talk about. We don't have simple answers. There's no like, oh, they cross the line, say this, do this. Your kid calls, do this. This is like constantly. It's an art. It's a dance. It's like in this moment, I'm in this mood. I have this much energy and this much time so I can do this. But tomorrow, if this comes up and we're constantly, but the goal is as Todd would say, know where you are, because sometimes when our kids are crossing the line, it's because so many other people in our life has crossed that line today and our kids are the last straw. Do you know what I mean? Like where we're not taking care of ourselves very well. And then all of a sudden our kid yells at us and we're like, I'm done. And whereas if that would happen at 8 a.m. and our kid was crossing the line means what does their behavior mean? I don't feel heard. I don't feel seen. Nobody is noticing what's going on with me. And it may feel selfish, like you kids don't understand how much us adults have to deal with. No, they don't, because they're kids. So we can't make them understand us. What we have to do is this is why having children is like the most unselfish act. It is a top-down thing. We are always the ones going back in for the conversation. We are the ones who are having to do the dance even more than them. But what we're teaching them to do is do the dance as adults. They are watching us come in and out and figure out new ways and apologizing and showing up. And then they know how to do it when they become adults. We can't expect our children to be adults, though. Okay.
So we're going to go a few minutes late just because we start a little late. Okay. But Millie did say maybe even be vulnerable with your younger daughter and tell her how you're doing.
Absolutely.
Your best to support her, but you're feeling very overwhelmed right now with her sister. Sending hugs to you, Anita, because it must be so hard right now. All right. Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to say something to Anita. I went through something really similar with my now 17-year-old son when he was 12. And actually, John Duffy helped me kind of figure out how to connect with Nicholas, because I was at the first conference, it was 5 years ago, and I was really upset with the fact that my son was shutting down and he wasn't talking to me like he used to. And I wanted him to talk about his feelings and I wanted to understand what was going on in his life. And it was very much, my energy was really high and kind of coming at him like, I need to help you. I need to do the things I'm supposed to do as a mom to support you. And he helped me realize that I really needed to meet Nicholas where he was. And it seems really silly, but basically I came up with three questions that he would allow me to ask him. And so, because he would always say to me like, Mom, I don't want to talk to you because every time we talk, it leads to this big conversation that I don't want to have. So it was kind of good that he told me that, but he was right. So we came up with the deal that I could ask him three questions. And it was, are you doing okay? Is there anything I can do to support you? And then can I give you a hug? And it was usually, I'm fine. No, there's nothing you can do. And yes, you can give me a hug. There are some days where he wouldn't, but I will say now, all these 5 years later, that doing that and kind of taking the pressure off of having conversations or feeling like I really needed to connect with him. And then that was the bottom line, that kind of magically, he would start coming to me. So and it's not perfect. It's not like he talks to me about everything, nor should he. But I kind of met my own needs by saying, like, all right, I can feel a connection if I can at least ask him these questions. And then he invariably now he walks in the door and he gives me a hug. So we may not talk about anything, but at least we have that hug. So anyway, I just thought those three questions might help you with your daughter, because like I said, I went through the same thing and it's really, really hard because we want to do the normal things we do as moms and support our kids. And when they're shutting us out, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing for Anita. And then my other thing is it's probably less of a question and more of a request for support, because I've talked about this before on the calls, but I'm in the process of getting divorced. And the good news is that we're close to finalizing it. And we focused really strongly on helping the kids to adjust to their new life, to living in two different places, to, you know, going to school. Some days they take the bus, some days they don't, like just all these different things that they had to adjust to. And Vinny and I, we stayed in marriage counseling, and that's been really helpful because she kind of has us under a gag order where we're not allowed to talk about anything except in our sessions with her. And it really helps us focus on co-parenting and being there for the kids instead of having the legal stuff and any kind of conflict we're having bleed over into the kids. So all that's good. The bad part is that as a result of getting divorced, I need to go back to work. And I've been out of the workforce for about 20 years, which is so alarming because I can't even believe I'm old enough to be out of the workforce for 20 years. But I'm feeling really, really insecure and really unsure of how I'm going to deal with balancing being a mom and working, and also just feeling like, you know, as a full-time mom, I take a lot of pride in it, but at the same time, then I sit down to do my resume and then it's like a blank space for 20 years and I'm supposed to justify what I've been doing. And the hard part is that as soon as the divorce settlement is signed and filed with the court, within 30 days, I lose my health insurance. So it's really an urgency to find a job so that I can have my health insurance. So basically what I guess I'm asking is, does anyone have any suggestions for how I can kind of change my mindset about feeling like basically like a total loser who has nothing to offer the world because I've been home with my kids? And I know that sounds really harsh, but it's really hard to sit down. I mean, I don't know how to change. I kind of feel like, oh my gosh, I should never have stayed home full time with my kids because now look at me. What do I have to point to? I mean, I know I have my kids to point to, but I can't say that in a job interview when they're asking me what my skills are and what I can do. So anyway, I'm babbling on now, but that's basically, I was just looking for support with that.
So Jennifer, if a girlfriend called you with the exact same scenario, what would you tell her about her being critical of herself?
Frozen.
Yeah, I think we were frozen.
Yeah,
we were frozen.
About that. Did you hear my question?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I know that I'm being really self-critical, and I know that I am being my harshest critic, and I would never want a friend or a family member to feel that way about themselves. So I would definitely talk them out of that. I think that, you know, there's all this change going on for me. You know, I wasn't planning on returning to the workforce, and I guess I'm just really scared. I'm scared.
Mm-hmm. Hold on. It's unstable. Hold on. All right. Did it come back?
Yeah. Our internet is crapping out on us.
Crapping out. Can you hear me, Jen?
Yes.
Okay. One thing that I'm going to give you something, Todd and I are trading positions here because I'm going to give you something really practical. Okay. You've already made a resume for work. You need to take 10 minutes and sit down and make a resume about your last 20 years and all the things that you learned to do. And you need to get those words and all those adjectives down, because my job over the last 17 years of being a mom has developed me into the human being that I am. I have learned how to do critical thinking, multitasking, you know, self-care, recognizing what other people need, how to be in a group, how to socialize with people I don't know, how to, my skill set has grown much bigger than I think it ever could have in a workforce. So you need to write a resume about what you did as a mom. And that's not necessarily what you're going to turn into your new employer, but you're going to do that so you have some adjectives and you have some understanding of what you learned. Because what you just said was, I can't go in and talk to them about what I did as a mom. Bullshit. Of course you can. This is what we, like, you can go in and say, like, I know for a fact, I don't even know, you know, I know that you brought in speakers to your school district because I remember you brought in you brought in several, a woman that was going to be at our conference, the kindness lady. What was her name?
Oh, yeah. Orly Waba.
So yeah, Orly. So like, you've done things that are like work-related, event planning, organizing, and you need, they will know that you have that experience if you can relay that experience, but you need to first write it out so you can see it, because you are basically comparing apples to, you're trying to make it apples to apples and saying, I've done nothing in the work world, which in the last 20 years, you've done probably more than a lot of people in the work world, but you need to get it out on paper so you can see it. Okay. And just do it in 10 minutes. Like, you don't have to make it a big all day Saturday project. Just start typing all the things you did as a mom and continue to do and come up with some great language around it, because you have to organize not just your thinking, but your words, and then put it up on a big poster on the back of your door. Mm. So you read it all the time.
There's so many good comments, and I'm not going to read them all, but I'm going to save the chat and it's going to be in the show notes. But, you know, this community is about support. And there's, I mean, with between Anita and Jennifer and everybody else, Alicia, like, we all are in this together.
Yes.
We all have each other's back. And, you know, you asked for support, Jennifer. So let's all just lovingly send some good vibes towards Jennifer, because we've all been there in our way, in our own way.
And you know what, Jennifer, you might end up interviewing with a mom who stayed home for a while, who gets it.
True.
You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. You might end up talking to a new mom who's like, oh my gosh, I would love to be able to work with you every day so we can help each other. Like, you have no idea what's out there. And there's a lot of women who want to support you and men who want to support you. And so it's the viewpoint, the shifting is there's more out there than I know. And the, you know, these people, you're going to read this chat and you're going to be like, yeah, you're not alone in the best way. A lot of moms.
That's what I love about talking to you guys. Cause whenever I feel really alone and I turn to this group, it makes me feel so much better. So thank you guys so much.
Well, and also remember, I mean, what are the odds of us having a Zen talk the day, you know, the fact that Anita had a crappy morning, I guess we were lucky, but they use the Facebook page. I mean, that's what it's there for. So if you're open to it, just vent a little bit and say, my kid's driving me nuts and I'm sad and I'm emotionally exhausted. So, I mean, we're here, but.
And sometimes it's less about what do I do with them and more about how do I take care of me? And because once we know how to take care of me, then we know what to do with them.
Sweetie, Anita's got a Boston cream donut.
Yes, Anita, it's my girl. Donuts.
That is so.
Donuts are life.
Oh, and so it's so, what's so cool is nothing has changed, but I could tell through this little screen. My internet just went down.
She knows what's up. She's got her donut. She's good for today.
I know,
I'm not trying to cause a food sugar problem. I know, blah, 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 that, you know, that we don't want to numb out, but dudes, sometimes you got to have a donut.
Well, and maybe, can you guys hear me right now? Yeah. Okay. Her energy is so different now.
I know. You look so chill, Anita.
And nothing changed.
I want to go drive around with you and listen to hairband music.
Yes. All right, guys. Listen to today's podcast. It's a good one. And last week, we're getting a lot of good feedback.
Thank you.
The whole wounds and triggers. So
we love you. You're not alone.
Keep trucking.
Thank you.
Be good.
I'm going to go check on Bird.
Bye, baby.
Boston cream.
I would have said a Mr. Misty Freeze.